All right, Coastsiders. It's Friday, October 15th, 2021. Yeah, that was a frog in my throat. I'm feeling a little salty this morning, as you might imagine, given the game last night. We'll get to that in a minute, but I just had to warn you. Yeah, it was a rough night. I'm sure there was some yelling around the Coastside.
Man, it was just such a nail-biter.
All right. Well, in the meantime, we'll get to that in a second. In the meantime, Coastsiders, grab your pumpkin spice latte and a forklift. It's time for some Coastal Windage. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast, the Coastside's number one live call-in talk radio show. We're kind of going to be speed talking this week because we didn't have a show last week. We'll get to that as well. And so we got to do two shows in one here, basically. News piles up on the Coastside. Things happen here. And as we know, when our summer break, when we don't do a show, there's lots to talk about. For example, we will not have Livy next week. Again, she's... Yes, she's very much in demand. She's doing these book signings and stuff. Like, she's all over the place.
Got a lot going on.
She's a hot property. People that listen to the show know that. Okay, if you miss our live broadcast, and this is live, there's no net. This is us. We're here on Main Street right now looking out at a beautiful sunny day at 9:01 a.m. KHMB News Radio time. All right. If you miss the live broadcast, you can download podcasts of all of our past shows. We're up to show number 156 now, over 5 years. You can listen to any of our past shows by going to khmbradio.com. All right, our topics today, World Championship Pumpkin Way Off.
Woo-hoo!
It's back. It was back, and it was big.
It was big.
It was big. Two scary incidents in El Granada, and when I say scary, I mean
really scary.
Yeah, and... Big sigh. Bike paths or Winchester Mystery House? What are we going to have out here on the Coastside? Okay. While you ponder that, ponder this. The show, as always, for the last 2 or 3 years, brought to you by the Half Moon Bay Brewing Company. Great spot there in the harbor, right on Capistrano. Nice patio dining. Nice inside dining. Incredible menu. It's the weekend. Treat yourself right. They have treated us right. And they've treated the community right with more than $750,000 in scholarships that they've and other donations that they've made to the community over the last 20 years. Okay. Also, the first green certified business on the San Mateo County coast, and their patio is dog friendly. All of that in addition to the incredible food on the menu and the beers. Okay.
The beers.
Okay. This is live, so go ahead and listen to us right now. Right now, our phone line is offline, so you can't call, but send us an email, coastalwindage@gmail.com. We'll get to the phone line situation in a minute. Like I said, feeling a bit salty, Giants game last night. This was a magical, amazing, franchise-setting 107-win season. 107
yeah, it
wins.
Was. It was an amazing season.
107 wins is ridiculous. 100 wins is a plateau in baseball.
It's huge,
of like,
right?
You are an amazing team. 107, and you look at that lineup at the beginning of the season, and you're thinking, 70 win season, maybe. 107?
And look
Whoa.
At that.
Okay, so 107, the first place, beat the hated Dodgers, and then we have to play them in the playoffs. That's perfect. It's setting up to be magical. Comes to game five, also setting up to be magical. Even when the Dodgers went ahead, I was saying to my
And home.
Yeah, and at home. I was saying to my son, it's been that kind of season. Like, I'm not even worried that we're going into the bottom of the ninth down 2-1 because it's been that kind of season.
Right.
And look at who's batting. Brandon Crawford gets up, slaps that one to left field, thought it was going to drop. Okay. But then you got Chris Bryant coming up. Like, he's a big hitter. I think he got on base with an error, and then Lamont Wade Jr., who is batting over 500 in post ninth inning with runners on, comes up inside fastball, roped it. I jumped out of my seat. I thought it was at least going to hit off the wall in right field, just foul.
So close.
And then
so close.
Just the insult to injury. I know, Bay Area folks. Here's the thing. Listeners know I grew up in San Diego, so if you're familiar with sports at all, you know the pain that I carry around with me every day. Okay? So this was like, I've suffered many of these types of disappointments over the years. But, you know, this one hurt because it was to the Dodgers. I mean, I grew up in San Diego, so whether you're a Bay Area Giants fan or a San Diego Padres fan, the Dodgers are what we have in common.
Yeah.
Which is we hate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And so to lose to the Dodgers.
Really was just salt in the wound.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm
all
sorry.
All right. So. All right.
Shake it off.
Move it. Yep. Yep. That's
shake
right.
It off.
Rub some dirt on it.
So then I'd assume that you are not going to be for the Dodgers for the World Series. Is that correct?
So my dad's thing was always like, okay, well, you know, you always root if you get beat by a team in your division or the National League, or you always root for the National League team because that's the team that beat your team or whatever. No, I'm not going to root for the Dodgers. Are you kidding me? I don't care. What's those bumper stickers? You know, bumper stickers are like, my favorite team are the Padres and whoever playing the Dodgers today. You know, like that kind of.
Yeah,
that's I think, how most people feel who don't live in Los Angeles about the Dodgers. All right. So we didn't. So, yeah, shake that one off. Rub some dirt in it. Move on. No show last week.
I was a little disappointed not to walk into tiered balcony seating here, considering they were working on the roof.
It's closed off right now because we're still in COVID.
Oh, so that's with the tarps hiding?
Yeah, if we were to take that down, you would see that we took the roof off the studio this past couple of weeks to add a second tier to our viewing gallery in anticipation of getting back to our live studio audience and our phalanx of interns post-COVID. So we're working on that. We also installed the 4 McLaughlin Deep Fusion broadcast transmitters in a brand new Marconi 390X synchronized array with dual 32-inch nets and a Fetzler board. So
good,
there
God.
You go. There you go.
It's so, well hidden. Where
it's in the walls. Yeah, it's in the walls. So okay. So after this week, Coastal Windage, the Coastside's only live call and talk radio show, will be rocking the coastline, the Coastside. From Point Reyes to the Mexican border and beyond. Yawn, yawn, yawn. Okay. But for now, today, no phone line. So somehow that didn't get reconnected. Okay, we got the Fetzler board. We got the Marconi 390X with the 32-inch dual nets, but we didn't get
We have the space shuttle launchability code and punch button.
I think we can launch the space shuttle from here, or at least SpaceX or something.
Aged myself. The space shuttle. When was the last time?
What are you, Apollo 11 now? You're like the Apollo 11 capsule. We can launch that. Okay, Livy going back in her time capsule. All right.
Yeah.
So earlier this week, we had a gale watch and a fire watch advisory issued for the Coastside for Sunday through Tuesday. This is when winds are sustained at 34 to 47 knots, which I guess is gale force. It's something in Southern California, which we have at this time of year. They're hot winds. We call them Santa Anas. This phenomenon, this meteorological phenomenon of this, it's clear skies, it's sunny, but there's like a 30-mile-an-hour wind blowing as if there was a gale, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it was cloudy and rainy, you would be like, yeah, this goes perfectly. But it's sunny. Okay.
It's counterintuitive.
Yes. This phenomenon, this California-specific phenomenon, was noted by Richard Henry Dana in his 1840 account of sailing and trading along the coast of California in the early 1830s. This incredible nonfiction book. So guy that was going to Harvard, he had some health problems, and so he decided to take a break from Harvard, and this is in 1832, and so he signed on to be able-bodied seaman on a sailing ship that was going to California, around the Horn. There's no Panama Canal.
Wow.
From Boston, around the Horn to California.
It's pretty adventurous.
Where there was
then.
Nothing.
Yeah.
California was nothing. This is pre-Gold Rush. And so this is his – and before the mast, so 2 years before the mast. That means he was not an officer on the ship. He was an able-bodied seaman living in the front of the ship where the regular sailors lived in dark, cramped quarters, doing all the heavy lifting, running up on the masts and everything. And so they sail around to California in 1834. This is an incredible book because it describes California in 1834. There's nothing there. They go to San Diego. They go to San Pedro. They go to Los Angeles. They go to Santa Barbara, Monterey, and San Francisco. There's like one building in each of these towns, a couple buildings in each of these towns. So it's really interesting description of the California coastside in these places that we're all familiar with when there's nothing there. And he's describing like what they would have looked like before all the development that we now know as California.
What's the name of the book again?
The name of the book is 2 Years Before the Mast. Okay. And so he notes there's a whole chapter about this dry gale. So they ran into it November 1834. The horizon met the sea in a defined line. A painter could not have painted so clear a sky. There was not a speck on it, yet it was blowing great guns from the northwest. The gale was now at its height, blowing like scissors and thumbscrews. For 3 days and nights, the gale continues with unabated fury, with singular regularity. There were no lulls and very little variation in its fierceness. Yeah, that's exactly what we have out here when we have these heavy winds blowing. It's lucky for Richard Henry Dana that PG&E wasn't around at the time to PS their sails and rigging. Now, when they were in this dry gale, which is blowing out of the northwest, as it does, it took them 20 days to beat up the coast from Santa Barbara to San Francisco.
Wow.
20 days to sail up from Santa Barbara to San Francisco.
Can I ask, this is probably, I'm showing my non-native Californian, you know, nose wart right now, but...
Interesting.
Have we figured out where these winds and gusts originate from and how far off the coast? Like,
what you're at.
I don't know.
I don't know. Somewhere over there.
Did he not find this out?
Well,
I want to know.
This was 1834, you know, they barely had a map of California at that point. So
they were just happy
they came
not
out of the,
to go off the cliff of the flat earth.
Yes, exactly.
I see.
So a couple more interesting things about this book. When they got to San Francisco, he noted that on the entire San Francisco Peninsula at the time, 1834, there were three buildings, Mission Dolores, Mission Santa Clara, and one small trader's shack. That was the entire San Francisco Peninsula.
Wow.
Three buildings, 1834. So that's pretty interesting. And he notes about San Francisco Harbor in 1834 when there's three buildings there.
Wow.
If California ever becomes a prosperous country, this bay will be the center of its prosperity. Richard Henry Dana, hats off to you, buddy.
Hats off.
Okay, Fleet Week was last week.
Wow. I saw the best videos from multiple people on the Blue Angels flying overhead.
Thank you for the lead-in. So I was coming back from a basketball tournament in Marin. My son and I went up there in the morning, and we drove across the Golden Gate Bridge, and I mentioned to him, it's Fleet Week. We're going to be coming back in the afternoon. It's possible we might be driving across the Golden Gate Bridge right as the Blue Angels do their traditional Sunday afternoon fly around, which includes a flyout over the Golden Gate Bridge and back.
Yeah.
So sure enough, we're coming back around 3 o'clock, and I'm seeing we're coming around like San Rafael and stuff, and I'm seeing like exhaust. What are those things called? That when planes make exhaust lines in the sky. It's like a conspiracy theory, like the.
Yeah.
Anyway, seeing that the planes were flying around, I was thinking, oh, I might just time it right. Yep. I have a picture.
No
I'm literally like right in the middle of the Golden Gate Bridge, and they flew right across.
That's like out of a movie.
It was actually the second time that's happened. I was doing a bike race about 15 years ago, coming back from Marin. Same
that's
thing happened.
Awesome.
On Fleet Week. I mean, they're pretty incredible. And then they fly out, then they fly back, and after they fly back across into the harbor is when they do the like straight up.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, that's just like wow. Can you imagine the G's of going straight up in a
I
jet
can't.
Like that?
I mean, I get seasick on a ski lift, so there is no way I can. I would pass out, and there would be vomit all over the plane.
Yes.
I mean, it would be not a pretty sight.
No. No. Same here. It was a pretty spectacular sight. Another spectacular. There were so many boats in San Francisco Harbor.
Yeah.
It looked like you could practically walk out to Alcatraz.
Yeah.
So a pretty incredible spectacle, I would say.
Yeah.
All right. Let's give you the air quality report. Love doing this because nobody else
has this.
No one's figured this out yet. Okay. Traffic and weather. How many gazillion apps are there? Every radio station. This is like, I don't know. You know, this is like having a morning zoo show. Like, everybody's been doing this since radio started. But now we're in that time of history where we need to worry about air quality. So here it is. We get this from purpleair.com. And it's all good for the coast side and the peninsula like it usually is. 0 to 50 is incredible, like breathing pure nectar. 51 to 100 is pretty good. Over 100, it's like you're in Los Angeles. So today in El Granada, 5.
Nice.
5.
Nice.
Today in Half Moon Bay, 6.
Nice.
Today in Redwood City, 8.
Wow.
And in Santa Cruz, 12. So
pretty awesome.
It's a great day to breathe.
It is.
Most days
day
are, right?
Breathe it in, people.
It beats the alternative, but today is a great day to breathe. Go in and suck down a couple of extra lungfuls. Okay. So we don't have the phone this week. So
no.
I did scrape out a couple extra
emails
from the bag.
Great.
And we'll see what we've got here. Okay. These would be
Give us some good ones.
These are addressing the show 2 weeks ago because we didn't have a show last week.
Right.
So this one is from Kermit the Dog. Kermit the Dog about the red-legged frog sighting. Somebody had found a Kermit the Dog writes, "These things are real? I thought they just flew them in for city council meetings and design review."
Oh! Ouch!
I mentioned I don't know. Like, they kind of seem like, yeah, whenever
they suddenly
somebody
appear.
Whenever somebody doesn't want a project, there's always a joke about, well, maybe we should bring in, like, a bag of red-legged frogs and dump them in the yard, and then they can't build here. But I've never seen one myself. So when people say they see them, my first thought is, I mean, was it or was it just another frog? You know,
yeah.
Like, do we know for sure? So I don't know if this has been verified.
Well, this person seems to be in on the joke.
Yeah, I guess so, right? And then I remember I asked, Livy, you weren't here, but I asked Coastsiders, which they can't call in right now, unfortunately, but what is the other endangered species, which is always cited in these discussions of coastside development, of like, this is, there's two endangered species, red-legged frog and another
and
one.
A community pool.
That's a missing person.
Sorry.
I believe that's a missing person.
I just had to go there.
So the answer to that was the San Francisco garter snake. San Francisco garter snake, red-legged frog are always the two creatures cited as endangered species that could stop a development project. All right. Here's an email from listener Coastside Strongly. Sorry. All the letters are running together right now. Coastside Strongly regarding COVID update, because we gave it a COVID update.
Okay.
How is an update on COVID a local topic? I thought this was by the coastside, for the coastside, and about the coastside. Even our local talkers are chasing the ratings, I guess. Well, yeah. I mean, how do you think we're going to get paid here? But beyond that, well, since you ask how it is a local topic, I shall explain. Last week, or 2 weeks ago, was reported by KPIX Channel 5 that Coastside is starting to fall behind in the Bay Area vaccination rate. Quote, around 66% of people 12 and older in El Granada have received their first dose of the vaccine, and around 53% of people in Moss Beach have received their first dose, according to county data. That's low compared to San Mateo County's overall rate, which is around 93%. And we mused on the show. What? Why?
Yeah.
Why would these
I think that sounds relevant.
Yes, and why would these two, but that there's some why these two communities? This doesn't make any sense. If they said Montera, we might think, okay, Montera has a libertarian reputation. But even then I would be, Montera's rate is like 91% or something. Let's see. Moss Beach. Yeah. Montera, 97%. Okay.
Well,
so
done.
What is happening in El Granada and Moss Beach? That's what we asked. Well, guess what? The MCC must have been listening because the Midcoast Community Council took this up. Two members of the MCC, Michelle Wheel and Claire Toutant. Michelle, who's the chair, who we've had as a live interview guest on this show because that's what we do, they decided to look into it because this doesn't make any sense. Right. Okay, so they asked the same question. They met with San Mateo County public health officials and found out, guess what?
What?
San Mateo County Public Health has not been counting Midcoast vaccine data correctly.
Oh, Are you kidding me?
Okay, now that makes sense. Okay, so here's what was happening. Seal Cove and Pillar Ridge Manufactured Home Park vaccine results went to a big unincorporated county bucket instead of to Moss Beach.
Ah.
Okay, and Princeton and El Granada vaccine data was applied to Half Moon Bay because a lot of people in those two communities have 94019 zip codes, which is the Half Moon Bay zip code.
Yes.
So this is a statistical situation having nothing to do with actual vaccine. And so everybody's chasing their tail over statistics that are not accurate.
Yet another fallout by being an unincorporated town. I'm so done with it.
Well, thank goodness for the Midcoast Community Council. I mean, they're on it. They looked into it.
Yes.
They're solving this. They're addressing this issue. And thank you to Michelle and Claire. They will be meeting again with San Mateo County Public Health until they get the numbers right.
That's awesome. Thanks to them for doing that.
Those are
getting to the bottom of it.
Midcoasters, those are your elected public officials.
Well done.
Go to meetings, listen in, help them out. Okay, this one is from... I didn't get this name for a while, and now just now, like about 2 minutes before the show, I was like, oh, I get it. So this is Lary, then capital NX, so Lary Nix. But then I read it like 15 times and realized, oh,
Larynx.
Yeah, because you got to read the actual comment, and then it makes sense. Like, that's what I love about our email people is that they have fun with the names, but I guess. I outsmarted myself and was trying to figure out the name without reading the comment. Once I read the comment, yeah, it's Larynx. Good. Livy, she's not even looking at the email. She got it like 2 seconds. I'm like spending 3 days on this.
That's actually one of the benefits I've drawn by being slightly dyslexic. Like, I can figure out I can wordsmith or lettersmith.
Wow.
Are
you good at
the word? I'm good at the license
fine?
Plates.
How about
you
the
know?
Jumble? Do you do the jumble?
I'm really good at the jumble, but I'm good at license plates also. You know, those vanity plates that, you know, might take a moment to figure out.
Yeah, vanity plates for me are
I got the skills, man.
Vanity plates for me are like the posters where you're supposed to let your eyes go soft focus.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
And you see, I've never seen the thing behind there. Vanity plates, I'm like... XL7. I don't get it. Okay, so Larynx. Okay, good one, Larynx. Larynx writes regarding radio legend Jay Michaels, who I interviewed on the show
nice.
Last week. Yeah. What I want to know is, does Jay Michaels do any special vocal exercises, or was he just born with the golden tones and perfect cadence? I get this question myself a lot.
Do you?
Yes. No. But the question I
bet you do, Ruben.
The question I get is, when are you having surgery for that? Okay. I think radio legend Jay Michaels, I think he was born with the golden tones.
I do too.
Livy knows this. It usually takes me a couple hours out in the trailer for prep and makeup to get ready for a show here.
Radio You're legend, quite the diva, Ruben.
I mean, you gotta be ready. But radio legend, I've literally seen this. He literally rolls out of his trailer, like right from a nap or something.
Yeah.
Right into the studio, sits down and starts talking. Like flicks one switch and is literally like barely even into the chair and he's already talking.
He's
and
got
it's just
those
it's perfect.
Luscious
yeah.
baritones.
Some people are naturals.
Yeah.
All right. What's our KP our K
925? We're doing well.
All right. So we're gonna we've got the pick the poison thing. We haven't introduced the new 10, but I'm gonna skip that this week because we're trying to. We're doing a lot of development here at the station. One of the things we're trying to do is update our Coastal Windage webpage on the KHMB website to be able to include things that we're referencing,
yes.
such as like a link to Richard Henry Dana's 2 years before the mast,
yep.
or
yep.
Links to pictures that we're referencing, or other
for the
things.
List of Pick Your
the
Poison.
The Pick Your Poison
yeah.
list, yeah. So hopefully we'll just pause that feature of this show until we can get this up on the
That's
website.
Smart.
And then people can look, go to the website and look at that and then call in when the phone line is reconnected and play Pick Your Poison. Okay, so we're just suspending that momentarily. All right, let's get to the fun stuff. World Championship Pumpkin Way Off. Livy, I think I saw you there.
Yes, what an event. Everyone came out in full force. I have to also give a major shout out to the high school band. The Cougar High School Band. Yep. I mean, they did an amazing, amazing job. And they looked so happy to be there. And go ahead.
Even beyond that, Livy, I was talking to the parent of one of the band members. All last year, they never touched an instrument. It was all Zoom meetings. So
wow.
They were just doing musical theory. Nobody touched an instrument.
Wow.
Nobody played an instrument. Nobody learned how to play an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And so these kids that we were seeing there, this parent said they actually had to call in a couple of students who had graduated to kind of help out because no new students had learned to play because nobody had been together to play. So the fact that
there was
10 or 12 kids out there playing music is pretty impressive.
Not only playing music, but there were a few that were kind of like dancing to the beat, which I thought was fantastic.
Well, it's a marching band. I mean,
I guess you didn't grow up
in the Bay Area with the Stanford marching band.
I did not. But I will tell you that I have this pretty strong need to go to one of those marching band competitions. I love marching bands.
Okay.
I could watch marching bands all day long. And there are some competitions at Stanford. And I haven't been able to go the last couple of years.
I'm making this face right now because marching bands are one of those things of like a little bit goes a long way. Like marching bands definitely have a place in Americana, right? Parades, high schools. But after about 5 minutes, all I'm hearing is the drum.
See, that's my favorite part.
I love it.
The drums and the snare drums in particular, and the trumpets, the best. Those are my two favorites, but all said and done, the entire marching band. And then, of course, I'd want a seat way up in the nosebleeds because I want to see the formations that the bands make.
I just
love the pomp and circumstance of the marching band. Anyhow, they just did a fantastic job, and everyone was getting into it. The little kids loved it. It was just a great event.
So this was the 48th annual. Last year, they did it at Long Branch Farms, and it was invitation only. So it wasn't a public event, and people definitely missed it. I mean, we're missing the Pumpkin Festival this year, but we had a slice of it there, a slice of pumpkin pie on Monday when we had the World Championship Pumpkin Way Off at the IDES Hall on Main Street, its traditional location. Cameron Palmer served as MC, as he always does.
He was wonderful.
Yes. The day started out a little rough. It was pretty darn chilly in the morning with a cold wind blowing. I was there, by the way, as a live correspondent for KHNB doing live radio updates of what was going on there.
And I was just eating donuts and drinking coffee.
Livy was there signing autographs. I mean, you should have seen. Would you have two sheriff's cars, three sheriff's cars for your motorcade when you came in?
Stop it,
Come on,
Ruben.
Now.
I
think Cameron had to – they had to stop the pumpkin weighing while your motorcade came in.
I asked them to stay outside the gates. They stayed for a while, and then it got to be too much.
It was chilly.
I told the security to take their sunglasses off. Look like locals, please.
Well, I know, but the three-piece suits didn't quite fit in. They needed some cowboy boots.
You're right. Next year.
It was chilly at the beginning, and it's 8 o'clock when it started, with kind of a biting wind, you know. But only a few diehards. And I was getting a little worried. Like, did people hear about this? But by 9, the sun was coming out. It was warming
people
up.
Really people started rolling in.
And by noon, when the last pumpkin was announced, it was its usual thing. It was shoulder to shoulder. It was warm. People were into it.
Were people wearing masks, dare I ask? Since it was shoulder to shoulder. Like, when I was there, I didn't feel compelled to wear a mask.
I didn't. I mean, there was wind blowing and stuff.
There was wind blowing, but it also wasn't crowded when I was there. I don't know if I would have felt differently.
I'd say it was 30% of people were wearing masks. And I would say there's a couple hundred people there at noon. There were no food tents, which was disappointing. Not even a food truck parked outside because it was chilly. There was a pancake breakfast going on across the street by the Lions Club. They were doing a pancake breakfast.
Nice.
But when I got there at 8 a.m.,
There was a tent with donuts.
Mm,
yeah.
Yeah,
there sure
I did
was.
I did see
it
people
was
getting
the back.
Okay, but
I got one.
Oh, okay. You know what?
Maybe that's why there were none left.
Yeah. Didn't nobody brought me one. Okay. Anyways. Yeah.
Every man for himself. Every woman for herself.
Also there was Jim Stevens, who I like to call the Arlo Guthrie of pumpkin songs, if you've never heard this guy.
I am so glad you brought that up. Yeah. He was amazing.
It's hilarious.
He was amazing. I love the lyrics.
Yep. Yep, it was really good. Like, he writes these songs that are like Pumpkin Festival, Pumpkin Weigh-In, Pumpkin Contest.
Brilliant. Can you say his name one more time?
Jim Stevens.
Jim Stevens. Yeah. Well done, sir.
Yeah.
Everyone I was talking to just could, they were so impressed by the lyrics and his
really good.
Guitar playing. And it was just great.
Yeah, it was very fun. No jokes this year. I don't know if you remember in years past, they would, in between pumpkins, because it takes about 5 to 7 minutes, especially when you get to the big pumpkins.
To lift and load
take them
those
out.
Things.
Yeah, they're parked in. It's really a fun scene when this is going on. If you go to Johnson Street, the next street over to Main Street, where they're staging everything. I went up back there in between pumpkins, and there's 10 or 15 pickup trucks parked along Johnson Street.
Wow.
And they each have a gigantic pumpkin. It's like some like scene. Like I just got transported. You know, these trucks have been miniaturized or something. They're like little Tonka trucks with these big pumpkins in the back. It was just, and it's hilarious to see these gigantic pumpkins in the back of these pickup
trucks.
That's
why we make such a good team, because you really enjoy the background and figuring out how things get done. And me, I just like the finished product. Just give it to me. I don't need to know. I don't need to look behind the screen, look behind the curtain. I just plunk it down, and I want to see the weight.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I want to see how the sausage is made.
Exactly.
But then I'm usually sick to my stomach about it.
Oh.
So, okay. So at noon, the winner turned out to be Jeff Uhlmeyer from Olympia, Washington. First time winner. The thing is, we think, oh, it's just a fun thing. Pumpkin, you know, there's who has the biggest pumpkin. This is serious business. There's like a professional org. I overheard two growers talking about how they were like kind of mad about the fees and the dues that this professional organization of giant vegetable growing.
Really?
Like, yeah. So
that's a legit thing.
Oh, this is a whole community and like thing that we just see once a year at the pumpkin festival. So anyways, Jeff Uhlmeyer, first time winner, he beat out two previous winners. So again, like once you're a winner, you get the title of grand grower for the year. And I saw people walking around with like fancy gear jackets that said like Grand Grower 2014 and stuff. So
bedazzled denim jackets.
Yeah, you get a you win the
business.
Title, like you're a legend for life. You're made for life. Okay, so Jeff came in with the winning pumpkin of 2,191 pounds. He beat out Leonardo Uranus, who won.
Excuse me.
Yeah, Uranus. I hardly even knew him. Right.
What?
Hey, that. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I know.
That's terrible.
It's early in the morning. I get it.
It is.
Okay, so Leonardo has won twice before, 2019, 2014, I believe. And also he beat out John Hockley, who won one time before. Jeff's getting $9 a pound for his 2,100-pound pumpkin, or $19,000, $19,709.
What happens to those pumpkins? Are they retired after?
That's a good question.
I mean, what do they do? I guess they bring it back to their pumpkin farm?
Don't tell San Mateo County. They'll be starting to carve them out and make them into, like, tiny homes, ADUs for people, you know.
There you go.
Live in a pumpkin.
Look at you, Ruben.
2 weeks ago, but the 2,191 pounds, that's nothing. That is nothing. 2 weeks ago, the new world record for the heaviest pumpkin. Can you even take a guess?
Well, now it's got to be significantly larger.
Yes,
so I am going to say 4,500 pounds.
Oh, okay. Well, that would be, wow.
Okay, 3,200.
2,703
pounds. Wow. Okay.
I mean, that's still like.
That's huge.
Yeah, that's a lot of pumpkin pie right there. Okay.
Well, I mean, so large that I had to lend out half of my security team just to get the winner back to his state.
Oh, you gave him a lift?
Gave him a lift.
No, well, you should have just loaned him your plane. Well,
no.
Radio legend Jay Michaels was using...
I only go so far, Ruben.
He was using the KHNB G6 last weekend, so you couldn't use it. Okay. All right. So we go from fun, happy, like this is what the Coast Side is all about, right? Pumpkin Festival. See lots of friends there.
Yes.
Everybody's in a good mood. Little kids running around. Jim Stevens' music. I mean, it's everything that we think about when we love... When we think about why we love living here,
yes.
Right? And then we contrast that. Now we go right. This is what we do. Why we get you all happy and excited and high, and then we take you right into like the depths of humanity. Two scary incidents in El Granada this week. On Sunday night, a giant eucalyptus. Are there any other kind? A giant eucalyptus fell across Ferdinand Street in El Granada, crushing a car. When I say crushing a car, I mean. Yeah.
Sandwiched.
It looked like it went to the crusher at the junkyard.
Yeah.
Crushed.
Thank God no one was in that car.
And how did this tree fall and not hit somebody out walking their dog at 5 in the morning? Or a house? I mean, it did not hit a structure.
It was so fortunate.
I don't know how this is.
The way that it went down.
No injuries, but there sure could have been.
Yeah.
And so now there's talk. So the eucalyptus are, if I can borrow from the kids' lexicon these days. Eucalyptus on the Coast Side here has been heavily trending the last 6 months to a year, right? Because people are worried about the fire danger.
Yeah.
But now with this incident, there's talk about what is the life expectancy of eucalyptus. What I've heard is that it's about 100 years.
I've heard the same. Yeah.
And that when they hit that number, it's like the next day they fall over.
Yeah.
So guess what? Most of the eucalyptus in El Granada were planted between around 1908 and 1920, so...
It's time.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Okay, so if
That's
you...
That's frightening.
It is. It is, because we got lucky once, but, I mean, if these eucalyptus start dropping, it's going to be trouble. Somebody's going to get hurt, and a house is going to get hit.
Those trees are no joke.
Yeah, heavy
they
trees.
Are. I mean, so quick question about the 100 years. Yeah. Is it the roots that dry up? Is it?
Wait a minute now. You're asking me where do winds come from? What is the life? What is the physiology of eucalyptus roots? No, I'm just. That's
encyclopedia truth maker.
See these folks behind me right here? That's what their job is, right?
We I want to know.
We paint the broad strokes. Hey, we need some topics for next week. Go find us something. They do that. They hand us a couple of note cards, and we run with it. I don't have the background information.
It seems to me that their roots must dry and shrivel up, and then the weight of the tree just propels it to fall because... From the looks of it, when I saw the tree that fell, it didn't look rotted on the inside. It
looked fine to
yeah,
me.
It looked fine. I think it's the root system that must be weakened.
Yeah. Yes. Yes,
does that
it
sound
is.
Good?
Yes, yes, yes. And
someone
you know what,
email us, please.
I know.
Set
what,
us straight.
What I would be saying is, you know.
Please call but you
but
can't. Sorry.
The line is still not connected. Okay. Then, okay, so that was just, you know, act of God or nature, whatever you want. But on Thursday afternoon, okay, a man was unloading his car in his driveway on Avenue Granada, about a couple blocks in from Highway 1. And as he backed away, he had a SUV with a hatchback, and he was, you know, leaning into the back part. As he came out of... From underneath the hatchback, he turned to find two men standing in the driveway, one of whom then pointed a semi-automatic handgun at his chest, demanded keys, phone, and what else? Keys, phone, and wallet.
Wallet, yeah.
Okay? Which the man handed over. You can read posts on Nextdoor about this. The man said that he feared that worse was going to happen to him, except fortunately a woman and her daughter happened to be walking by the street. Because this happened at 2:30 in the afternoon. Okay, this is a brazen, armed robbery in broad daylight, in El Granada. So that's pretty scary.
God, pretty scary.
Yeah, the men
Jesus.
The men fled on foot. The sheriff's searched for them, but as far as I've heard, they didn't find him. The man's phone was recovered on Highway 1, so the theory is that these two guys, it's a crime of opportunity, right?
Did they take his car?
No. No, I don't think
they just
so.
Took his keys?
Yeah, they fled on foot. Well, I think because we've talked about this before. This happens. It's not uncommon for criminals of opportunity to come to the coast side for a quick score. You come in, you do a quick score, you're gone in 10 minutes through the tunnel, you're gone. A couple years ago, there was a rash of car burglaries, smash and grabs, like a big rash of them, that ended up, they found out that it was linked to a huge operation doing smash and grabs on the coast side and taking the loot to cargo containers in Oakland and shipping them to Asia. We talked about this on our November 9, 2018 show. This was a whole organized ring that was doing these little smash and grabs, filling up cargo containers and sending them
back to
Asia.
Can't do that anymore. No cargo containers, no cargo ships.
I've somehow...
They're all taken.
Crime prevails. So, and then a couple years ago, there was a series of brazen daylight burglaries in El Granada and Frenchman's Creek, often occurring while the residents were home. So this would happen at like 10 o'clock in the morning. The garage door would be up. A person would, person with some pretty big, brass ones would just walk into the back door of a house or something, grab whatever they could. Okay, so it's not uncommon for this to happen. And so what the theory is that they came, they parked their car at like the old, monster restaurant parking lot or somewhere around there, and then walked in looking for a victim that they could quickly
assault
and then flee on foot so nobody would see the car they were driving, go to their car and be gone in like 10 minutes, which is exactly what happened. So the thing,
traumatic.
So both my wife and I have had situations like this happen to us when we were living in San Francisco. My wife was walking home one night. A car drove by her as she was walking on the sidewalk. Three guys jump out with a gun at gunpoint and demanded her backpack.
Oh, my God.
This is at like midnight. Yeah, she could have been dragged into the car and who knows where, but they just took her backpack or her wallet and left
her
and went.
Thank God she was safe.
Same thing happened to me. I was doing deliveries in an alley somewhere in San Francisco in the middle of the day. I reached into my truck to get something and felt something in my back, and a guy had a knife in my back. Okay, so this is in San Francisco, which you kind of expect, okay? Okay, when you go into the city and you don't live there, you're kind of on guard, right? You should be looking around. But when you're in your driveway in El Granada at 2:30 in the afternoon, and you turn around and there's a gun in your chest, you're in another world. Like, I don't even know how you process that.
I don't either. It's surreal in the worst way.
Okay, so so things that are worrying me, but obviously like crime, right? Okay, so that's one. Two, any crime like that, especially involving a gun, but
and not just a gun.
Yeah,
I mean it was a rifle.
No, it was a hand.
No, but it wasn't. It was a semi-automatic.
Well, that's like a 45. I mean, it's just like you see on TV, a Glock 9 or something. Those are.
Oh, they are?
Semi-automatic means that you have to pull the trigger each time.
I thought a semi-automatic was like one of those machine gun things.
Well, I mean, it can be, but the definition of a semi-automatic is you have to pull the trigger each time to fire a bullet.
God.
Automatic is you can just pull the trigger and it shoots a bunch of bullets. So those are two different things, but...
I'm a little concerned that you know all this, but okay.
And a semi-automatic handgun is plenty scary.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
So there's that. Two, Livy, you and I both live in El Granada within what I would call the zone of opportunity, which is a couple of blocks from Highway 1, where somebody's just going to drop in, do something, and be back on Highway 1 in 2 minutes and gone. Okay. The third thing that, as a parent, this is concerning me. Some of the comments... on next door, comments that I can understand, but that could go to a dangerous place. Comments like, well, we've got to protect ourselves. Well, we can't let people come in here and do this to us and things like that. So my worry is that people are going to be frightened by this and go and buy guns, or maybe they already have guns in their house. And kids the age of my child and your child, who may be out doing teenager stuff like Ding Dong Ditch or running through people's yards in the middle of the night or something, that some person who's, you know, worried about this and maybe has a gun in the house is going to run outside and shoot first and ask questions later. And one of our children, who's just being a, you know, goofy kid, is going to end up being hurt or killed. And this happens. This does happen. This is you see this all the time. You know, some teenager has, like,
it's so frightening,
snuck into a garage and is, like, taking beer out of somebody's beer fridge, and the person walks in and, like, shoots them because they think they're, like, you know, robbing their castle or something. So that's my number right now. That's my number one. Now, if I had had the gun pointed at my chest, I'd probably be more worried about, like, crime in general. But I'm worried about an innocent person being hurt because people's anxieties are raised now. Like, everybody feels, like, pretty on edge
what
about this.
I mean, honestly, I just feel so badly for that poor man and his family. And I don't know what the woman and her daughter witnessed. I mean, it's just traumatic all the way around. And it's frightening. And it's sad. It's sad. I don't want to have to worry about this. And I know that's not real life. You know, I'll never forget when 9/11 happened. And I said to a friend of mine, I'm like, what is happening with our country? And she was like, honestly, the world is coming to the U.S. This has been going on in other countries forever. And I really do feel like we've lived in this wonderful hamlet, or we live in this wonderful hamlet of a place, where we've come to expect that, you know, I could always count on my neighbor, you know, to help me out in the where I might not see them or, you know, be able to talk to them, you know, constantly. And maybe I see them once every 3 months or whatever. But I always know that if there was ever a problem, I could count on them. And I still feel that way. But now you know, in the back of my head, am I going to have to look over my shoulder as I'm unloading my groceries in the car?
Yes.
And I just, that makes me sad. It just makes me sad. I know it's realistic, unfortunately, that is something I'm going to have to do, but how pathetic and sad.
I guess we're soft here on the coastline in the sense of, like, when my wife and I lived in San Francisco. When you live in a big city, you get an edge to you.
When you live in a city,
you become desensitized to the street trauma. You know, homeless people, things happening on the street. You know, fights or whatever. You just walk right by. Like, that doesn't involve me. Like, and you have a sixth sense. Your head's on a swivel all the time. It just becomes a second nature because you're living in the city and you know that, like, that's, you know, you got to be on your guard. But a lot of people move to the suburbs or semi-rural communities to get away from that, to get away from the noise and the stress and the pressure and to be able to, like,
A lot of people haven't lived in a city.
Right, especially people that live on the coastside, you know, that maybe grew up here and stuff. And so, you know, so my wife and I have lived here for a couple decades now, and I will admit, like, I've gotten soft in the sense of, like, I don't think about those things.
Well,
and when I go into the city,
that's not wrong.
When I go into the city, it takes me a little while to, like, get my city persona going of, like, not being, you know, anxious every time someone walks up fast behind me or something, you know, like, you just got to, like, you got to get back into your groove of city living. And so I know that we're country living mentality out here, and incidents like this, really kind of, like, are startling. But they, you know, if we were living in San Francisco, this would be like,
I know, but that's just it. We don't live in San Francisco. We've chosen to live here. We don't live in a metropolis. And I don't want to have eyes in the back of my head. Well, I really do. It's very upsetting.
Well, I mean, that's.
I know these days, I guess it's not realistic, but
there's a lot of, especially in the Bay Area, I think in the world, there's a lot of pressures in living right now. And so I guess everybody's feeling the pain in some way. All right. Bike paths or Winchester Mystery
House?
Yeah,
I saw this topic. Yeah. I'm not quite...
Did you throw me. Okay, good. All right. So there's been lots of talk lately about bike paths and bikes as transportation options to relieve the traffic congestion. There's the ongoing, ever ongoing, never to be completed, and kind of irrational or illogical Connect the Coast Side, which is supposed to be some transportation plan for the coast side. But that does not involve Pacifica or Highway 92, really. So, okay. Half Moon Bay Public Works is doing all kinds of stuff, you know, down at the south end of town and stuff. Okay, fine. We'll play along. Let's increase cycling as a transportation option. Sure.
But what?
But despite a distance of only about 6 miles, there is currently no dedicated bike path that runs continuously from Half Moon Bay to Monterra. So we've got this 6 miles of these six communities here along the coast side. All this talk about bicycling and everything, you can't ride your bike from Half Moon Bay, let alone from Miramontes Road to Monterra, let alone from Monterra to Pacifica.
Mm-hmm.
There's no continuous bike path that goes from anywhere to anywhere here on the coast side.
You don't have to tell me twice.
And when I say Winchester Mystery Path, there's bike paths that literally go for like a mile and then just end.
Okay, that's the connection.
End. Okay,
yeah.
Ridiculous stuff.
Like, you mean at Rocket Farms?
Like the Naomi Patridge, yes, that for some reason comes along the west side of Highway 1, even though there's already a coastal trail on the west side of Highway 1.
Yeah.
There's nothing on the east side, so you see kids going to school every day riding their bikes against traffic on Highway 1 on the shoulder because there ain't no bike path on that side. So the Patridge, which runs along the west side of Highway 1, then crosses Highway 1, causing traffic delays at Frenchman's Creek, and then goes over and runs on the east side of Highway 1 for about a mile, and literally dead ends back into Highway 1.
I think 1, a mile is generous.
Back into Highway 1 at the most dangerous part of it, where it goes uphill with two bridge crossings with narrow shoulder.
But it doesn't even go that far.
No, it doesn't even go that far.
It stops at Cowboy.
Right.
Cowboy surfing.
Know. Right. So there are no segments that go anywhere. Okay. And then with the Medio Creek Bridge out, there's that detour that brings the coastal trail up to the Highway 1.
Yeah.
Right? So, okay. In addition, no safe crossings except for the thing in Moss Beach, which I don't consider...
Don't get us started on that.
I said safe crossings, not just lines painted on the ground. But no safe crossings have been added anywhere on the coast side. I guess there's a new stoplight at the south end of town. That will be fun when that's online. And now there's a...
I don't think that is adding safety.
No. I mean, it's adding congestion and backup. Yes. Okay. Okay. So what? Do you remember when they were making this, the Rocket Farms?
Yes, I do.
They had... Literally, it looked like they were putting a new superhighway in there. Four or five or six huge vehicles, rollers, dump trucks, for a less than a mile of bike. Yeah. I mean, they were working on it for 2 or 3 weeks or longer.
I know.
To do a less than a mile that goes nowhere.
So, wait. You're bringing this up.
Yeah.
Are you bringing this up because there have been surveyors out on the road for the last week and a half?
Well,
are they going to build this thing?
I don't know what those guys are doing, but they ain't working on a bike path.
They're
not?
What the heck are they working on? Because they are up and down one between the harbor and all the way up to Farmer John's almost.
I mean, these are folks from Caltrans, so... You don't know. We don't know. It's a black box. Maybe they're going to put in another crosswalk. I would say that, but I say that facetiously because they didn't do any of this kind of work when they slapped that paint in Moss Beach. Okay, so when I see them, it makes me nervous. Mm. Why are they doing this?
Yeah.
What is going to appear in the middle of the night with no notice? That highway, like a couple of weeks ago when they were cutting the trees and Highway 1 was shut down.
Yeah.
And you could, it took you an hour and a half to get from El Granada to Half Moon Bay.
I wish our phones were working. Michelle, Coastal Butterfly. Is it Coastal Butterfly that she goes by or Coastside?
Coastal Butterfly.
Okay, Coastside Buzz.
Coastside Buzz.
But maybe email in because I would love, I bet if anyone knows, you know what's going on.
So there was an article in the Half Moon Bay Review about a whole $1 million in federal grant money is being allocated or possibly allocated for a bike path in Half Moon Bay. I mean, sure.
Another one in Half Moon Bay?
Well, to be on the east side of Half Moon Bay from Spindrift down to like Terrace, you know. So like on the east side that we were just talking about.
Right. Where ironically there is the largest shoulder.
Yeah, right. That's where the snow chain. Yeah, that's where the snow chain signs are. Exactly.
Not that it shouldn't be there, but
so that they're supposedly they want to put in a bike path there. Sounds great. I'm not going to turn up my nose at $1 million, but that seriously, that's like saying to my son, "Sure, son, I'll give you the down payment for your new Tesla, but then you have to come up with the monthlies, the insurance, the fuel, and the maintenance. Good luck to you on that."
Yeah.
So here's your down payment. But yeah. What about the rest of it? $1 million, I mean, that's literally the permitting and the survey, okay? City engineer, this is from the article, city engineer said that this is a portion of the $4 million requested from the federal government to complete this project. We're hoping that we can use it to start the process of design and environmental review. Yeah, I can tell you from the MCC's work with the county to try to get that Rocket Farms path that extended from there to El Granada School so that kids could ride, yeah, you know, without being on the frickin' highway.
Yeah.
Okay. But it doesn't work that way because the county won't allocate money from its general fund. It won't say this path to do this thing is going to take $6 million.